My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast. Hello, everyone. We're back. Welcome back to the EDP Formula One podcast. I'm Michael Bailey. Apologies for the recent radio silence. It's been a very busy few weeks. We've missed doing these podcasts. We hope you've missed them too. But we are back, and with three races to go in the 2014 season, there is still plenty to talk about as the season comes to its climax. Joining me today, this afternoon, tonight, it is dark outside, I'm not really sure what time it is. I have a packed panel of Richard Baxter, Kyle Cumbers, and Stephen Rust. Good afternoon, gentlemen. We all well?
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Very well, thanks, yeah.
Beautiful, round the table, like that. It's good stuff. It has been a while, hasn't it? Been far too long.
Yeah, so it's 2 months, is it, I think? A lot's happened since the last one.
It certainly has. A lot has happened. Okay, obviously we're recording this just after the inaugural Russian Grand Prix. Before we get stuck into that race, I think we have to reflect on the events in Japan and, of course, the accident involving Jules Bianchi. He's still in a critical but stable condition in hospital in Japan, and obviously we all wish him all the very best and a load of positive thoughts and energy from a small part of Norfolk. Made things very tough, didn't it, for the Russian Grand Prix, given it was sort of back-to-back straight races and there's almost no time to digest what happened at Suzuka.
Yeah, I think, as he sort of said, nobody had a chance to go home, sort of regroup and then go again. It was just straight away, and then obviously all the typhoon trouble at the time. I think there was trouble actually travelling to Russia, so nobody really got time to, you say, like I said, look back and sort of regroup. So I think especially Marussia, they've done really well to even race the weekend, and I think they'll deserve a good, I think, 3 week break now to,
yeah,
and hopefully we'll hear some good news between now and Texas.
Absolutely, which is of course what we're all hoping for. I mean, it only really struck me the other day that it was Marussia who had to deal with Maria Devalota's accident as well. I mean, I obviously knew that Formula One had to deal with it, but I'd kind of forgotten that was Marussia as well. Such a tough situation, really, Richard.
Yeah, it is. And when you look at what happened and you think back in history, you have to give a lot of credit to the old drivers, you know, in the 60s and even the 70s, you know, somewhat with the driver being killed pretty much every race, and the mental state that those guys had to be in to go out again and race in the car that they knew one of their, you know, best mates has just been injured in. Is that same kind of thing. You think that must be similar thoughts that Chilton must have had. And I was actually hoping that Damon Hill would be there having words with Chilton after what happened to Damon Hill in 94, and it kind of, you know, he managed to spur the team on and nearly win the championship.
Yeah, famously, following Ayrton Senna's death.
Yeah, that's it. And been nice if he could have some words with Chilton and kind of help him through. That'd be quite good, kind of mentor almost for him.
Yeah, certainly. It was very, very, very tough for Max. I suppose it's interesting what Richard mentions there. You know, back in the day, Formula One, you'd look on the grid and, you know, a third of the drivers on the grid that day wouldn't be with us a year later. Such was the accident and death rate in Formula One. But I suppose given that we haven't had a fatality in Formula One since 1994, I don't think people get complacent about it, do they, Steve? But it makes it such a shock when we get anything like this, even though we're all well aware of the risks and what everyone has to, you know, partake in and takes on each race.
Yeah, it does really. I mean, the last time we had anything like or come close to it was with probably Massa's accident, really. Yeah. I know Alonso had a near miss, but it was very quickly sort of forgotten about. But, you know, the last time really was with Massa, but I think this is being treated considerably worse, really. You know, I think it was always inevitable in most people's mind with Massa that he would come back and race again. Indeed he did, but I think pretty much straight away we're all well aware that he more than likely will not come back to race. You know, and very sadly may even still be fighting for his life, you know, in time to come. So.
Indeed, yeah. And as I said, we obviously wish Jules the very best. The thoughts of what the accident means for Formula One, I suppose that was always going to start pretty quickly, wasn't it, as it does. Formula One does have a very good record of learning from these things. And the one thing that seems to be coming out and might be implemented pretty quickly is controlling the cars under yellow flags and controlling their speed unilaterally by the FIA and by the race director, which strikes me as something that probably should have come in anyway. They do it in other formula, in other series, don't they?
Yeah, I saw in Le Mans, 24-hour race this year, they had a, called it a slow zone.
Yeah.
And they called it, and that seemed to work quite well. I think it was a, damage to a chicane or something that took half an hour, but the race continued and they just knew that this slow zone was coming up, so they slowed down and pit lane limited what they had and went through, and that seemed to work very well. So, but only came in this year, so I don't know if Formula 1, but Formula 1, they keep getting told, is the pinnacle of motorsport, so maybe they should look ahead. And also, these slow zones is, for actual racing, is a bit more fairer than a safety car. And as Martin Brundle keeps moaning on Sky Sports, all these lap cars that have to go round and round and it takes forever to get racing again, so maybe...
Well, you're almost not, you're not neutralising the race, are you, effectively? You're just almost preserving the gaps, preserving the gaps, I suppose. And I was very interested in listening to James Allen because of, he kept reiterating the fact the accident was avoidable, which I suppose it was. The FIA are well aware of whatever speed Jules was doing into the corner, and you know, maybe it's best no one speculates on that, and we don't necessarily need to know that other than he did lift off. But the trusting of the drivers to how much they judge they should lift off is not an ideal situation. But maybe the thing that gets me is that you could have tractors and other vehicles, you know, in places where cars could hit them, without a safety car slowing everything down to that degree, and the protection on the tractors and the cranes as well.
Well, yeah, it's quite interesting because there's a lot of talk about how it was avoidable, but I don't want this to sound really bad and like I'm saying it wasn't, because obviously, you know, there's lessons to be learned for definite. But when you look at the car, he was on intermediate tyres on a track that was getting wetter. Now, the team has a responsibility there to say, you know, okay, if it's getting heavier, come in for wet. We get, you know, they've got the wet tyres, which will help more in that situation. So, I mean, that could have been another thing that would, maybe he wouldn't have lost grip and he could have carried on. But, and there's another one I actually saw, Marussia, they put a tweet out, and that was a few laps before, and it said Jules is suffering from a lack of rear end grip.
Well, the tyres were old as well, weren't they? They were old tyres. So, then you don't know if he was coming in for a pit stop that lap.
Yeah, you just don't know. But there's all sorts of different factors in it. Like you say, there's a lot of speculation about it, and it'd be interesting to see what happens. I think it's tough to defend, you know, keep the marshal safe, keep the driver safe from the recovery vehicle and everything. But I think that this kind of virtual safety car, I think they're calling it, I think that does sound like quite a good idea, and I think that'd be the way to go.
That's the other thing. The accident could have been far worse, couldn't it? Because you'd have only needed a couple of marshals around the crane and it would have been horrific.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, I'm going to be complete opposite to Richard here, but in my opinion, it was completely avoidable. So I'm not sure if anyone else on the table here is aware of it, but before the accident, during it and after, on that corner, green flags were being waved.
There was it.
And I've seen the video that proves it.
Well, the problem is that the green flags are quite close to the section where there were yellow flags being waved, and it's whether, I suppose, possibly they almost gave the indication that everything was okay, just around the corner, so it wasn't too bad, I suppose. Did any driver coming up to that corner need to see a green flag at that point? I don't know, but then...
The flag that was being waved, the green flag, was directly above the actual accident. That shows that on the video, and allegedly, obviously we don't know the second bit, but allegedly coming up to the corner there were green flags instead of yellows. Other people have actually said, well, yes, I was sitting in the stand, and I can actually confirm that there were green flags on the corner before it.
Well, I suppose the conspiracy theories aren't helped by the fact that we haven't seen any proper replays, and I understand that from the perspective of the accident, which is pretty horrific. That said, I know Joe Saywood, I like him as a Formula One journalist a lot. He made the point that he'd seen the footage because it's handy to see the dynamics of the crash to be able to understand it and to understand what went wrong and hold things accountable if there are issues.
Yeah.
which is difficult, I suppose, when the footage isn't widely available. But they have tried to make the point that there wasn't an issue with the flags, haven't they? And I suppose the FIA would do that. If they were making a big safety briefing, that would be what they would...
Right, initially they said that yellow flags were being waved. Indeed. And then the video came out, and now they've kind of sort of stumbled and backtracked a little bit. You know, I think they've left themselves completely open to abuse on that one.
What do you think, Carl?
So they'll be... It should be on board coverage, shouldn't there, of...
And lights, of, yeah.
Yeah, because obviously the lights flash on the steering wheel as well, don't they, as well as the flags and the lights on the side of the track. So from what I saw the video, the green flag was from the next... Because it's different sectors, aren't they?
Yeah.
So that was Sector 7 he crashed in. I assume the green flag was then from Sector 8 that you can then race from there. So from the video I saw, I didn't see a problem with the green flag. But, yeah, I don't know if Jules could have seen it coming round that corner, because obviously it's an uphill section, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the onboard is probably, which the FIA can see, and I think I have watched. I was not going to release that for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So I think they can tell from that, really, if... You know, the best way, or what happened regarding the flags, but...
Well,
yeah.
If they start controlling the car speed themselves, then it takes away the uncertainty in what are, you know, situations where it's only about safety. If there's an accident, the only thing that matters at that point is everyone being safe, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how they do control the speeds. I don't know, a warning must come to the driver that, you know, speeds are going to be reduced and at this point, but... Maybe certain corners, because I think back to the Le Mans thing, I think there was occasions where there was safety cars, so that if it was, they picked out certain corners that if there was an accident this or sector, if there's an accident this sector, we would have the slow zone, and elsewhere would be safety cars. I don't know. Yeah.
It's difficult with Le Mans, I suppose, because the lap is so long.
Yeah,
it's almost hard to break it up, isn't it?
And I think they have free safety cars as well, which causes certain problems. If you get the wrong point, you can end up losing 2 or 3 minutes sometimes.
Yeah. Well, this is the other thing, isn't it? We don't want to... We all watch Formula 1 to see the racing, to see people competing with each other, and everyone knows the dangers. At the same time, you want to preserve the integrity of the racing. So there we go. Clearly a tough few weeks for Formula 1. I'm sure the right lessons will be learned.
Yeah, but trust the people. Trust the people in charge.
Okay, let's focus a bit more now on Russia with our EDP F1 pit stops. I know for a fact you've all missed David Tillier's impression of a pit stop. I have. Well, let's start off at the top. Russia, the race was won by Lewis Hamilton. He was on pole. He was fairly... comfortable for most of the race. They took pole position pretty comfortably. Rosberg came home second in the end, didn't he? Which was pretty impressive, really, from the opening lap stumble he had. Mercedes are constructors' champions, which all bar one of us, whoever predicted it, did predict at the start of the season. So no real surprises, I assume, gents.
No, I don't know how many 1-2s that is now they've had this season, but. You could tell from the start it was going to be theirs unless, for some reason, you know, major new rules happened halfway through, stopping certain things, and that changed something on their car. But now it's quite clear, you know, it's a bit like Braun had in 2009, where they were just so far ahead at the start they could just see it through. And Mercedes have actually, funnily enough, you know, same team when you look back. They've managed to keep it going this time and keep their car way ahead of everyone else. So it's... good for them to get it after Red Bull's 4 years of domination, but
just Mercedes domination instead, almost, isn't it? I suppose. I mean, it all came down to the start of the season. They were best prepared. Lewis Hamilton moved there a year. Did he move there a year earlier? Yeah, he was there last year, wasn't he? God, time flies. on the premise that they would do this, really. So it's all been planned. They've been working on the car a year longer than anyone else, and it was therefore probably about a year better than everyone else.
Yeah, they had the best engine. I think the chassis and aerodynamics are pretty good as well. equaling Red Bull. I said they had their... I mean, we've seen the Mercedes engine obviously be the strongest, but like I said, they built their car around it.
There must still be a lot of Ross Brawn in this car, mustn't there?
Yeah, I think you said last year he was pretty confident this year's car would be good. And I think the team he put together, I think the last few years when they've been signing technical directors after technical directors, it seems to have worked. And yeah, they deserved it.
Absolutely. Go comfortably. And in terms of the Drivers' Championship, Lewis now has a healthy gap as a lead. What is it, 17 points with three races to go? Although, of course, we've got the complete shenanigans of the final race and double points. I mean, Rosberg did brilliantly to finish second, given he completely almost mucked up his entire race on the opening lap, the opening corner, in fact. Was it a bit? It struck me as quite a desperate move.
Yeah, it seemed to me that he had in his mindset that his only chance would be at the start, and he had to just do it. And it reminded me of some of the moves that Alonso pulled on Hamilton at the start of the races when they raced at McLaren, where he just completely missed his braking zone and missed the corner altogether and ruined his race because of it. And really, for a driver to do that, they've got to be sort of almost desperate in their mindset. And and just not really sort of thinking about, you know, what is best to do. But you know, great for Lewis Hamilton. You know, he's got the sort of the head in the mind games, you know.
Well, this doesn't really work on a podcast, you know, 3 or 4 weeks after I felt it. But I have to say, even when Lewis was a race or two behind taking the lead and Nico was still flying, I still would have said Hamilton would win the world championship. Would anyone have disagreed with me then?
No.
I was probably at Spa. I thought maybe just the way things are going, I thought maybe this isn't going to be his year, sort of thing. Actually, Spa and the incident when Rosberg hit him was probably the best thing that happened.
It was a turning point, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe because Rosberg, the apology he had to give, and sort of Hamilton seemed to gain confidence from it that. Sort of the crowds were behind him, maybe a Mercedes
was
were
momentum,
behind him.
Wasn't
yeah,
it? A big momentum shift.
And then he sort of, Rosberg seemed a bit desperate from then on. He made the mistake in Monza, and he just, yeah, it just seems to, and Lewis seems to have gone up a step, and he's struggling to deal with it at the moment, and then is making desperate moves. And all season, when they've been racing together on track, he hasn't beaten, and Hamilton's always had the advantage, and I think that's just building and building and building, and he's making these mistakes now.
Which is probably the problem borne out by what happened at Spa, when even that was slightly desperate from Nico, and maybe left him, we'll never know, obviously, but whether he left that front wing in a little bit more than he should have done, that certainly would be what history will probably dictate. Russia looked a great track early on, and in practice and in qualifying was pretty good as well, yet it always looked a little bit like Valencia, and in the end we kind of got a Valencia race, didn't we?
Yeah, we did in the way. I think the first maybe five or so laps, I was glued to it.
It was crazy.
I mean, Vern
flying off the track everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, Vern did a terrific move. I can't remember what turn it was, but it's right out around the outside of Magnussen, just held on. And I was just like, how has he just done that? And he kept same speed, and he just held on, and then he took the line into the next corner and got him. And I was just like, well, what? And I did clap a couple of times to my TV.
It's loud. It's good. No, that's good.
But there was, you know, at the start, you know, so many people just all, like you say, all over the place, and it was like, wow, this is really going. But then I think, I mean, the tyres didn't deteriorate at all, really. Rosberg did the whole race pretty much on one set of tyres, apart from one lap, of course, which he messed up his others. But I think if the tyres had deteriorated a little bit more on that, I don't like to see it as much on some of the other tracks, but that one needed it a bit, just so we had a bit more pit stops, people going backwards and had to fight forwards and a bit more of that. But it just seemed really quiet otherwise, and I don't want to say boring, but it was
boring
a little bit.
I have to confess, I mean, I watched a rerun late at night, and I think I did doze off in places, and I still don't think I missed anything. I was a bit old school, wasn't it? It was a bit Bridgestone, tyres are fine, nothing's going on, which, I mean, seemed to be from the tarmac, but
yeah,
or whichever the surfaces, other surfaces are available.
Yeah, they're sort of, I think the problem was the tyres, but you can't really blame Pirelli because it's a new track. And they turned up with a softer medium, the middle ones are the range, and you can't blame them for that. But I watched the GP2 feature race on the Saturday, and it was a really good race. There's lots of overtaking, so I think the track was fine. I think it's just circumstances just led to, there was no safety cars, which we kept getting told were definitely going to happen. To punch up the group, and I think it's just circumstances. So yeah, I'll give it next year.
I mean, there were some walls, but there were a lot of very wide runoff areas. I mean, especially on the opening lap, I don't know how they kept track of cars running off and then returning to where they would have been beforehand. I mean, it was only probably unfortunate for Nico that he was out front, so he was miles ahead. Otherwise, he probably could have kept hold of the space, couldn't he? It was crazy. It was exciting at the start, wasn't it?
Yeah, the start was the best bit. I think we'd all agree with that. But so the rest of the race was just, admittedly, like you said, watching another Valencia, really. You know, I mean, I think even if Pirelli had brought like the super soft and the soft, I don't think it would have been too much more different. You know, looking for how many sort of laps that they did on tyres and probably could have done more, I don't think they would have been too much difference if they had brought the lower end of the tyre range. But we'll have to see what next year brings. You know, they might make some changes to the track surfaces. You know, maybe teams were being a bit cautious. Maybe they could have gone quicker and thought, well, we'll be conservative. A lot of teams are getting towards the end of the sort of five engines and all the other five that you can have. Maybe they were just being a little bit of cautious, you know, to try and save them. So maybe next year will be better, but we shall have to see.
We shall have to see. And of course, Russia will be back next year and probably for a while. The setting looked beautiful, though. It was a lovely clear day. I don't know. I think it was quite warm in the sun, but cold when the sun disappeared. But it looked like a great setting, and obviously where the Winter Olympics were earlier in the year. So it was a good roller coaster.
Did look good, actually. Yeah,
we'll have to go on that. We'll have to get there.
I heard that the temperature in Sochi was like 20 degrees, and in Moscow, I think it was -1. So it just shows how much of a change it is.
Goodness me. Yeah, it's crazy. And then other people said it was just like another Mokpo. And so they were a bit worried that it was going to end up like the Korean Grand Prix. But we'll see. They obviously want to make Sochi some kind of Russian fun house. Goodness knows what's funding it. But there we go. And just carry on. That was actually something a little bit disappointing, I thought. They were obviously trying to make Jules Bianchi tributes at the start of the race. It seemed to get very muddled with the Russian national anthem. And I wasn't really very comfortable with all that. I don't know what... I appreciated the gesture, but it seemed to get very muddled in sort of respect to Russia bringing Formula One to its country.
Yeah, because Sky reporting that this could be a thing now, that all the drivers have to go to the front of the grid for the national anthem and then go back, which doesn't make any sense.
I bet they don't do it anywhere else. I mean, it's just a Russian thing. They needed to be a little bit stricter with the lines there. Did anyone see the American flag, the stars and stripes flying in all the flags? Apparently we were supposed to watch out for it, because if it was flying, then the race wasn't a political exercise. And if there wasn't a stars and stripes, then it was.
Well, I didn't really keep an eye. There was so many flags in that circle in the middle of it, with the fountain in the middle. I don't really keep an eye for it. But
there must have been a US flag. Yeah, I can't believe it. So.
I mean, I heard rumours. Someone said to me on the Sunday morning, oh, apparently they're going to, because Putin's flying in today, they're going to cut all TV signals going out over. And I was like, well, why would they pay $30 million a year if they're just going to cut the TV signals and not show how good their country is? Surely that's the aim, isn't it?
And exactly. Nothing like a conspiracy theory. Anyway, they had a few of those over the last week or so. Red Bull, Sebastian Vettel's qualifying was a proper mess. In the end, he kind of recovered to a degree, but again, Daniel Ricciardo. What were we calling him? Daniel Ricciardo. Whatever. Daniel Ricciardo. Is still excelling. He beat Sebastian again. I don't know if I dozed off when he overtook him. Did he overtake him in the pits, was it?
He pitted quite early, didn't he?
Undercut him.
And then Vettel was quite late, and I think Vettel came out behind him, and
that was it. That was it. There goes your chance, which I think Daniel would have been quite happy about, because it obviously preserved his whatever it is that he's doing, title chase. I don't really think it's a title chase, and the Constructors' Championship is obviously over now as well. But there we go. Obviously, the thing that has happened since we were last on air, if you like, Vettel is going to be leaving Red Bull. It will be Ricciardo and Danny Kvyat. He is just a Danny now, so it'll be Danny and Daniel. Daniel at Red Bull next season, and Vettel is off to anyone?
Ferrari.
Yes. I mean, it hasn't been confirmed. There may still be question marks. I'm convinced it'll be Ferrari.
It's expected, isn't it? I think if you went to bookmakers and said, I want to put money on Vettel going to Ferrari, they'd just be laughing because they've just got your money for free, basically. But, you know, the odds must be so ridiculous on it. I don't know how much because I'm not really a betting man, but...
I'm just a little bit interested in if Ferrari had this fallout with Alonso and he's now leaving, I'd have thought they'd have announced it by now to say, oh, next year's drivers will be Vettel and Raikkonen, and to sort of just push Alonso out as a bit of a PR push. It just seems a bit strange why they're sort of waiting, because I don't know if the Alonso negotiations aren't quite finalised for his exit and they're waiting for that, or I don't know really. I'm just, yeah, it's interesting why they haven't announced it yet, but I'm sure he will with Ferrari.
Yeah,
but
McLaren haven't announced anything either, have they? They've said quite a few times they're going to keep their driver choice until the end of the season and decide. They've done that quite a few times when they had Hamilton and Button. They waited until the end of the season.
Yeah,
I think that's quite clever because it kind of spurs the drivers on to say you could be fighting for your job, basically, which is, I think, Roy Button and Magnussen, to a degree, have both picked it up a bit recently. But I don't know whether Ferrari are doing the same thing or not, but I think everyone in the teams knows who they want and where it's all going, but they've just, you know, not made it public or anything.
Yeah, well, that's even with McLaren, I suppose. Even though they keep everyone on their toes, you kind of get a feeling for what they're going to do. Like, maybe the fact that Jensen won't be there next season. That's kind of, I can't help but see that being the outcome.
Yeah, Jensen's normally quite a happy chap if things are going bad, aren't they? But he seems the last month, yeah, he seems a bit down, which isn't like him. I think he even then commented that on Sky afterwards, they said, oh, well, you get a congratulations message from Ron Dennis, and he sort of laughed it off. So, I don't know. But the thing with Alonso to McLaren, I don't know if anybody saw the Martin Brundle, Ron Dennis interview in Japan.
No.
And Ron Dennis, I think they're talking about past drivers and what makes them great. And the word that came out was loyalty. And Alonso probably wasn't the most loyal to McLaren in his time. So.
But then if he comes back, does that replenish some of that loyalty?
Possibly, yeah. Or a Honda pulling the shots.
Well, yeah, that so, too.
Yeah.
Alonso also said recently, when in 2007 when he was at McLaren, he said he never had a problem with Hamilton, but he had a problem with McLaren and the way they were doing things. So after saying that quite recently, would he then go back?
Well, Hamilton isn't there, so, you know, McLaren are still there. It's still the essence. It's fascinating. It is very interesting. I mean, there were signs of life from McLaren. They had a really good weekend of it, really, didn't they, in the end?
Yeah, I mean, fourth and fifth in the end. just seemed to, the track seemed to suit them, really. And I think the qualifying helped Button, because he's never been too good on just a one-lap run getting his tyres ready, but they were doing sort of free-flying laps, weren't they? So, yeah, it seemed to suit him, and he sort of, yeah, I think it's a good, really good performance, and hopefully that'll lead on to Texas and Brazil and further on, but you do worry it might just be a one-off.
Yeah, well, they'll have it to prove, definitely. As will Fernando, we'll have to see where he does end up in the end. It's not going to be Lotus, it's not going to be a Mercedes-powered car, which Lotus will be from next season, which is a bit of a surprise given Lotus used to be the Renault Works team. Goodness me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I would still just put a little bit of a crazy bit on Alonso taking a year out, you know.
The old sabbatical.
Because, I mean, a lot of it, these days it's too much of a risk for a driver to do that, because once you lose a seat, you know, you can struggle to get one back because they chop and change so much. But I think there's so many teams that would happily have his services on board. I think he can afford to just take a year out, because I think, I mean, I kind of read the rumours and that, and I could probably believe it. But, you know, the rumours are is that he would really like a Mercedes seat, as probably most people would. And his thinking is, you know, if that sort of pairing breaks up, you know, between rivalry, that will be the seat for him to step
in. Between Rosberg and Hamilton.
And I can't see a team honestly wanting to give him a one-year contract. You know, I think a team would want to try and sign him up for probably at least two, three, if not more. So I wouldn't mind betting something along those lines. But I could be wrong. We'll have to see.
Didn't Prost do that?
Yes, I think he did, didn't he?
He did a year out
and then came, was it between McLaren and then, I can't remember.
He got sacked by Ferrari, didn't he?
Yeah, for criticising the car or something.
Yeah.
God, yeah. Good job, Fernando has done that.
Williams, or he took a year and then went to Williams.
Seamless. at least there'll be a boost for Lotus if they do get Mercedes power, because my goodness me, I mean, they've been terrible this year, really. Poor Roman, I feel sorry for him, Romain Grosjean.
He just sounds depressed, doesn't he, on the
yeah.
on the radio, he just doesn't sound in
place. Get me out of here.
Yeah, and you've got old Pastor crashing.
Yeah, still crashing, even in a bad car.
Was it in Japan, Grosjean, in the qualifying, Grosjean started shouting down the radio
yeah.
and
yeah.
just going mad, doesn't he? It's just...
I think that was the end of his tether. Caterham, I mean, Lotus, we can still say they're slightly Hethel-backed, sharing the name, still, just about, somehow. Caterham, officially, their Norfolk ties are over because they have been sold. It's all happened since we did a podcast. They've been sold, they're under new ownership, they effectively have no more ties to Hingham and the car company, and even the GP2 team, it's all separate now. And they've had a mare of it. Their old employees have been sacked and they're suing them for unfair dismissal. The bailiffs have been round. There's an Formula One 2013 Formula One car for sale if you can stump up however much the sheriff's office one would want for it. Maybe Pirelli would fancy that, do some tyre testing. and the mystery of Kamui Kobayashi's DNF on Sunday, where by all accounts, apparently his brakes were overheating, but if it would be believed, they just haven't got the parts and they needed to save the car and the mileage.
If his brakes were overheating, you'd say pull out of the toe of the car in front and do all the other, you know, the other little techniques that they do. And you wouldn't have thought they would have said, right, come into the pits, we're going to call them. If they did, just chuck a bucket of water over them, that'll do. Might get a bit of steam. But
that would be an interesting sauna.
I also heard that the cars didn't quite make it back to Leafield today in Germany.
I wonder why that would be.
So the bailiffs can't get hold
of them? Yeah, possibly. You can't nick our cars if we never take them back. Well, maybe that's why they had to protect the parts as well, because they've all been taken by the bailiffs as well.
Isn't Colin Collers, didn't he have the Toyota base always linked to that?
Yeah.
Germany, isn't he? So. Yeah.
Yes, which were heavily involved in the original design of the Lotus Racing cars as well. I mean, it is a serious point because there are people working for the team. There are jobs on the line here. I mean, the team just seems to be being run into the ground until it folds, which, again, I have a serious issue over, because Colin Collis is only going to be there as a year as a consultant anyway, and he's busily trying to put together his own team to enter into Formula One in the next 2 years. Mm. I can't really see how any of this is in the interests of anyone other than himself.
And we don't know who these owners are, these mysterious owners there. I think they're just trying to get to the end of the season somehow to keep the entry, so that actually the team's actually worth something, because if they haven't got an entry for next year and pull out or drop out before the end of the season, I think they're the company's worth it.
Well, at which point, presumably, does Collis bring in his team and takes over the entry?
I don't know if he's... Has he got an entry for 2 years? Or was it?
No, he hasn't got an entry for it yet. I think he was aiming for 2016, so...
So he's got buy-in. Yeah.
It was all very dubious, and I'm not particularly happy about it, but it's Formula One, and what works better with politics than Formula One? a quick mention, I think we touched on it earlier in the GP2 series. Jolyon Palmer is GP2 champion, son of Jonathan Palmer, who owns Snetterton Circuit. Jolyon, in fact, once took me round Snetterton in a Radical racing car, and he's now GP2 champion. So.
I believe they're in Norfolk based, aren't they, Radical?
The Radicals, yeah, and that was a lot of fun. So I'm sure that helped Jolyon get to where he is. Not great season for him. Do we expect to see him in Formula One? The link between F1 and GP2 doesn't quite seem as strong as it has been in recent seasons.
No, I think the last two, Valsecchi and Lima, have had to go elsewhere.
It's been all about Renault and Renault 3.5, hasn't it?
Yeah. Magnussen last year, wasn't it? Yeah. And Red Bull seemed to prefer that championship.
Bottas and Kvyat, I think, have both come through that route as well.
But I hope for the GP2 championship, it would be good if the winner did come into F1, because then he can't compete in GP2 next year, because that's part of the rules, that as soon as you've won it, you're out.
Is that right?
Yeah, you can't get back into it.
So it's like they brought in one part of it where you can't race in GP2, but forgot to get the bit where they had to have a seat in Formula One. God, you almost don't want to win it, didn't you? No wonder he won it. Everyone else probably backed out at the last minute.
So he kind of, I mean, he deserves a go. Like I say, where is this heat going to become available?
Well, is this American team? Is it Haas F1 or someone? Is that supposed to be coming in?
Yeah, they're coming in. Is that next year? I can't remember.
Yeah. Was that 16?
Yeah, it could be. It could be 2016.
Yeah, 16.
But you don't know, is it Marussia? I don't know. Max, is he going to move on? I think Palmer's got a bit of backing from the MSV group and comma, whatever that is, on the side of his car.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully he's got a bit of backing to get somewhere, but yeah, we'll wait and see. Really.
We will. I hope so. He's a good lad, Jolyon. It'd be good to see him do well. Okay, of the weekends, driver and goat of the weekend. How about driver? Lewis, I was going to say Lewis, to be honest, because I couldn't see much further beyond it. Yeah, everyone agree?
I would agree with that.
I thought on the Saturday, Kvyat was probably the driver of the day, but then going into the race, it was just all Hamilton because he got it on pole. But Bottas would have come close if he managed to take pole in qualifying. I would have put in that as driver of the weekend. But
actually, we did miss out on, I was going to mention Williams in the pit stops, but yeah, Bottas so close to pole. It was brilliant to watch. Mm. It was brilliant to watch. Well, it'd be interesting you mention Danny Kvyat, because he would have been my goat for the fact that he turned such a good qualifying into pretty much a disaster in the race, on his home race as well. Mm. So, Hamilton for driver?
Yeah, I think it has to be, yeah.
And goat? Yeah. Any other suggestions?
I still look at the Saubers and kind of wonder what's going on there, because, I mean, okay, they had Hülkenberg last year, but they managed to get in a couple of fourth places. The year before that, they had Perez and, was it Kobayashi or?
Yeah. Possibly.
Yeah, 2012. Yeah. And they were getting podiums several times, and they were doing really good. And now they've suddenly just gone backwards, it seems. And I'm not sure whether it's just if it's the drivers not pushing the car, if it's the cars just simply not good enough.
But they're out of money as well, aren't they? Mm. Which it's probably ended all that. Yeah. You remember Perez coming so close to winning a race?
Yeah.
In Malaysia, was it?
Yeah.
Unbelievable scenes. Team? I mean, again, to be honest, Mercedes, top two, sealing the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah, wrapped up the Constructors. But also you have to give a shout to Marussia for actually turning up at the race. I mean, not even a week after this accident happened, and they were in Russia set up and ready to go. And that takes quite a lot of doing, having a good mentality.
Yeah.
As well as obviously all the work that goes into it anyway with the rest of the teams.
And the right decision to race only one car as well, I thought.
Yeah.
It would have been a difficult situation for Alex Rossi anyway.
I mean, either way, it probably would have been the right decision. I mean, it'd been good. I don't know, really. It's a hard one and it was a horrible decision to make.
Yes, it is. That's very true.
It's nice they had Bianchi's car there still, though. Yeah, it was in garage on Jack's.
Nice gesture.
If Rossi would have raced, he could have done it, for Bianchi, I couldn't see anything really wrong with that. I mean, but I think it was quite good they had a car there. And
I suppose given it was such a quick turnaround, so soon after the accident, I'm sure they will get back to racing two cars soon, no matter what. They've obviously got some points to defend as well. That's the way Formula One works, I suppose. Highlight, you've actually mentioned mine. Richard was going, well, it was partly the start and the cars flying everywhere, but the Jean-Éric Vergne overtake on Magnussen, which I thought was brilliant. Any more highlights?
I quite like the room before the podium and the weirdness of just Putin, Bernie Ecclestone and drivers and Hamilton walking in, sort of blanking everybody and
nobody really wanted to say much.
Yeah, what do we do here? I don't know.
I found that interesting because I thought Putin could speak English and he had an interpreter there or a translator, and I was like, surely he speaks English, doesn't he? So is that another little political thing saying welcome to Russia or something?
It only seems to happen in Formula One and under Bernie, and it was just a madness.
He knows who the boss is. He knows who the boss is.
The funny thing I find about that little thing with the room there is that the look on everyone's faces, there was just a little bit of fear. You know, the fact that he was there, I don't know whether it's because of, let's not get too political here, but, because of his sort of history or whether it was just
because he rides horses bare-chested, that's
you know, maybe, yeah.
It's going to go all, we're going to be like the bugle now.
But nobody really wanted to say too much or talk too much, and I think Hamilton just sort of shook hands with him, and even that looked just a little bit sort of, you know, a little bit sort of nervously, you know.
Something to tell the grandkids, isn't it?
The sort of champagne bit as well. I think Lewis got quite... I think Putin was still on the, you know, on the podium.
Did he have his own champagne?
Unfortunately not, no. But sort of Lewis was quite early on the champagne. I thought, geez, don't soak.
No. He'll remember it.
There's some pretty heavy guys around there with...
Maybe Hamilton was actually a spy because he was at the White House not long ago, wasn't he?
Oh.
Visiting, so maybe there was... It was a bit of...
American girlfriend.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness me. Moving on quickly. Okay, I think we will, rather than do it in two parts of a podcast, we'll do it all in one go because obviously we're short of predictions. We haven't predicted anything for a while, which you could say is rusty. Makes us all a bit rusty. USA is the next race. It's in a few weeks' time. Austin, it's a track we like, isn't it? I mean, it's done a great couple of races and properly embedded in the Formula One calendar already. I look forward to it now every season, to be honest.
Yeah, is it the third year?
Yep.
Yep. So yeah, I mean, like I said, it just looks. First 2 years have been good races, big crowds. Just looks quite a good fun place to go actually.
And drive.
Yeah, the track's good. And sort of probably on near the top of my list of possible Grand Prix to go to.
Yeah, let's all go there. Just after we go to Sochi. Lewis has won two of the last three American Grand Prix. Obviously, the first of those was the Indianapolis. So, I mean, do we look much beyond him doing it again? Where are we with this season? Because I suppose if he has a good weekend here, we're getting to the point where things could be sealed up, double points or no double points at the end of the season.
It could be. My only concern, really, with Hamilton is his engine situation. I was looking at this very heavily last night on the internet trying to find some things out, and all I've really ascertained is although that he's on the same number of engines used as Rosberg, he's kind of effectively used his fifth, because his actual fifth engine... is the one that caught fire, which all I could find out on the internet is the parts that got burnt out have been replaced by older parts from older engines, and they use it on Friday practices. So this engine is kind of, best I can work out, coming to the end of its cycle, and obviously there's still three races to go, and I guess Mercedes don't fancy chancing that engine they've been using in Friday practices as a full race. So I don't really know. I mean,
what's the penalty if they have to
start
from
the pit lane, isn't it?
Is it 10 place grid or is it?
Oh no, I think if you change it from like a Saturday to a Sunday, that you're back of the grid.
Oh, so it's part.
But I think it's a 10 place penalty, I think, for actually using or buying in a sixth one, if you like. Mm.
Which isn't too bad, I suppose. It is get roundable.
Yeah,
interesting to see if they know they've got to use it.
When they do,
because I doubt they're going to leave it until the last race, because that would be a bit unfair.
Yeah.
So, do they use it? Do they come out and say we'll use it from Austin or Brazil? I think because they're not going to use it for the last one unless. But yeah, so I suppose the risk. It's quite a tough decision. They would try and get this engine through the last three races. But they don't want to be getting a stage where, after Brazil, they're going, we really need a new engine now. There you go, Lewis's 10-place grid penalty, and it's a double points.
If they've been clever enough, I'm certain there's probably engines that have just done five that could possibly do a sixth race.
Yeah.
You know, and they could chop it around with used engines and restrict a bit of before, you know, running in sort of Friday and Saturday final practice. I remember a few seasons back Vettel had a problem. I think it might have been 2010, I think it might have been, when he came to the end of how many engines they were allowed, which I think was seven in those days. And that's exactly what they did with him, and they got through it and got away with it. I think they could do it. The trouble is, on the internet, it just shows how many engines they've used. You don't get any other information as to realistically where they are at with what they've used.
It'd be good fun if they, for the last race of the season, they said, oh, Nico Rosberg, Lewis Hamilton, new engines, 10 place grid penalty. start from 11th, 12th, whatever. What winning final race that would be?
That's the thing, if that does come to it, you've got to have a 10 place grid penalty. I think I'd say to the guys, to my drivers, start from the pit lane, because especially in Brazil, if you're going into that first corner and you're, you know, somewhere between about 5th and the back of the grid, you could be caught up in any smash at all. Mm. And you know, it was a, what year it was that 2012, I think, Vettel going into the first corner was hit, and Senna hit him and everything. That was nearly the end of the championship right there. But that could be, you know, a big turning point. And Brazil's one of those circuits that can, you know, championships often change there anyway, so...
The thing is, all Formula One teams, they'll have already thought of this. They'll have a plan. We can sit here filling up, but they'll know exactly what they're going to do, which is what I love about it. There's nothing they haven't possibly thought of, to be honest. Usual question, most important weekend for... I mean, at this end of the season, it's a championship, and it's Lewis.
Yeah, but Rosberg needs a result, doesn't he? From
no, he doesn't.
For him personally.
He does.
Yeah, if he goes... yeah. Isn't it 24 points, say, behind us? Yeah, it's a long way behind at that point.
Yeah, it would be, even indeed. Even with double points. Okay, well, obviously no predictions, I think. When were the last set? Well, the last set... Now, there's a bit of controversy here, actually, because the last time we had a podcast was before Hungary and after Germany, when it was just me and Richard. And I allowed you a free go at the predictions, Richard.
And I don't think I've got any.
You didn't get any of them right. But Mr. Rust, being top of the league and very on the ball, decided to email in some predictions anyway. So those went in. And just briefly, how did they go? They went quite... I think they did go quite well, as have most of them for you, Steve. Oh, no, they didn't, because you tried to predict the top 10 and it didn't happen. You did. So actually, you both had a free go and you both mucked up completely. But... as it so happens, Steve, you are still top of the pops, and with a very, very, very good strike rate. Better strike rate at the moment than either of the winners in the last 2 years. Even your good self, Kyle, the Oracle, as you were back in the day. You are second at the moment, though, Kyle, in the standings. Richard, you're third. I'm fourth. Ped is fifth. John Luton is sixth, having just predicted one race. He is ahead of DT, who's had five goes. And that's even with my enhanced algorithm. So, DT, you've got to come back in and sort this out. Which means we should predict what we think will happen in Austin. Who would like to go first? Everyone's feeling a bit rusty. Go on, Kyle. Go on.
As we mentioned earlier, Hamilton's seems pretty handy around the track, so I'm going to go pole and win for him. I think Rosberg will be second. I think Mercedes will dominate again with ease. So the final position on the podium, I'm going to go Bottas again. It's quite boring, but he just seems to be the man to come behind the Mercedes at the moment.
I love Valtteri Bottas. I'm a big fan.
I think I'll go back to my out in Q1. I think I have to be both Lotuses out in Q1. So I'm going to struggle around there. I think Button will have another good race. I think Button will be top five.
I like that. Happy. Who's next?
Oh, I'll chuck some in there.
Steve, it's not. Steve's normally like, I'm going to go first. He doesn't want any of this.
But yeah, I'm going to go Hamilton first. I'm going to go Rosberg second. I'm going to say Button for third.
Okay.
You can't really see much past the Mercedes for the top two. I think Button's going to have a good race. I think he will get third to try and prove a point to McLaren. I think, however, Rosberg's going to have a troubled qualifying. So I think he's going to get in the top 10, but I think he's going to start fourth. So he's going to get top 10.
What is that then? What are you predicting?
He's going to start fourth.
Rosberg is going to start fourth on the grid.
Yes.
So when the lights go out, he will be fourth on the grid.
Yeah, he's going to qualify fourth position.
Okay, he's going because they might change it. I'm just conscious of on the grid or at the end of qualifying.
At the end of qualifying.
Okay, so he'll qualify on fourth. Times he will qualify fourth.
Yes.
Okay, it's very important that we get this right. He will qualify on times fourth.
He's going to go out there and then he's going to go around one of the corners and something's going to go in the engine, so it's going to lose power. Then it's going to have to ease it around and it's going to run out of time.
Okay.
To get these
very specific. I mean, I won't hold you to all that, but I'll hold you to the fourth.
It's going to happen. I'm seeing this stuff.
It does happen.
Yeah, that is literally premonition.
And I'm going to make one more prediction, and that's going to be Ricciardo to not finish the race.
Ooh.
DNF.
Oh, DNF. Kudos point for that one. That's a big call. All right, then. Steve's sort of turning up his lip at that one. He's being very quiet, very cagey, the league leader. Clueless? Well, clearly not, Steve. You're leading us. You're much better at this than all of us this year.
I think I'll go with something moderately similar. I think I do agree that Rosberg will have a more of a difficult qualifying. So I'd probably go with the fact that he'll be qualifying on Saturday, this is, on the dirty side.
Okay, dirty side of the grid.
Yeah.
So he'll be an even number.
Yeah.
We'll say. Because we will assume that pole will be on a. Okay.
And I think for the second race run.
50-50, that's pretty low odds. You see why you're leading now.
I think for the second race run, and we'll have no safety car.
Okay.
I think Bottas will finish on the podium. I would go with that.
Okay.
He's just been so consistent. I would go with that. And I'd go with a lucky shot at Massa directly behind him.
Okay.
And leave it at that, I think.
Okay.
I daren't predict anything to do with Mercedes drivers, so I'm fair, I'll just jinx it.
You're worried, aren't you? You're worried. I like that. Yeah. That's good. Okay, well, I'm going to say Lewis will be on pole. I think Lewis will win. I don't think Rosberg will finish on the podium. I think he's going to have a tricky race. I think it's going to be a big weekend for Lewis. I think he likes Austin, and I think it's going to be very kind to him. I think Ricciardo will finish ahead of Vettel again, which is probably no great points there. And I would also say that one slightly left field. It's not very exciting down the grid, though, is it? I'm not finding it very exciting. Let's say Jean-Éric Vergne to continue his fine form. Him and Button to both be in the top eight. Is that very exciting?
That's fair enough.
So, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Kyle's nodding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And one more. I mean, clearly, Adrian Sutil will be out in Q1.
Still standard.
Do it, Adrian. Do it. Are we done?
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, that was a pleasure. It's good to be back. Not the easiest of subjects all the way through, of course, but. There we go. Hopefully, as I say, when we come back after Austin, we'll have some good news. Let's hope so. Eastern Daily Press Formula One coverage. You can find that at edp24.co.uk/F1. You can also find my weekly column. It's sort of weekly. Depends on the football, I'll be honest. That's there. And, of course, a link to the podcast and on Twitter at edpf1 for our Twitter feed to keep in contact with all of us here. Or I am at Michael J. Bailey. These guys are mostly on Twitter, aren't they, Richard?
I am. I'm at Bax_kid.
Kyle?
At Cucumbers.
I know we've had lots of tweets in the meantime. Now, Steve, have you joined Twitter in the meantime?
No.
No. Okay. Well,
no, afraid not.
And no one wanted to ask you any questions either, so sorry about that. And, of course, if any of you guys out there want to make predictions or tell us what you're feelings are over the course of the Formula One season, we always love to hear from you, and we can give you mentions on the podcast. It would be grand in this little Formula One loving pod in Norfolk. It's always great to discuss all matters F1. Okay, thank you very much, gents. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you after Austin. Until then, have fun and bye.